You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to betfredsports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
My God.
He's going to start recording now.
He's going to start. We are now recording Cobras and Fire.
All right.
With Bryn and Jason.
Listening to Cobras and Fire, a Pantheon podcast. And this week, my plus one is Bryn from Flip.
Might fall down, blinded by passion. Yeah, we could paint the town.
Yeah, Bryn from Flip. Welcome to Cobras and Fire. My name is Baco. Your name is Bryn. And Bryn Arnes.
What are the odds that my name is Bryn and my name is Bryn?
I'm not great at math, but I'm going to say 70.
Nor am I. I realized really early on, I think it might have been kindergarten, when I realized I counted to four for the first time in a band down the hall started playing, so I never really bothered going past that.
I'm glad to thank. Hey, man, thanks for swinging by and doing this. We had a lot of fun last time you were on, so this is going to be, I don't know, just more fun. I do have a little surprise for you, and it's not my cat.
Hi, sweetie.
I had this made for today.
You're kidding me, dude. That's badassery.
And
complete badassery.
So for the people listening,
I would have sent you the full. How did you? It looks fantastic. I would have sent you the full size.
File
of that printable. But it looks still, even with that, it looks great.
Yeah, I just grabbed this off Facebook. So it's the album, for people listening, this is the album cover. I just kind of had it looks like a game board. Well, that's what the art is.
It is a game board.
I thought we could actually play while we speak today.
Oh, my goodness gracious. You beat the pinball game, like, to a nth degree. Let me move my personal.
So,
this is outstanding.
Yeah, I'm glad you like it. Now, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of rules to this, right?
So many things are going to be revealed here. This is
my cat wants to play.
You nailed it.
Which color do you want? Orange or purplish blue?
I'll take orange because I can see it easier.
Okay, you go ahead. Roll first. We'll get started, and then I'll start asking questions.
We're using two die.
So
I get
one,
a seven,
three, four, five, six, seven,
which puts me on a red tile that says what?
Kilo runs out of weed, lose a turn. All right.
Do you want to hear something about that? All these tiles are 100% fact and have come from
absolutely.
My life.
What's the story here?
Which is why I say you nailed this. This is real stuff. Often, if we would get to rehearsal in the early
We're good.
Oh,
I just don't need to keep my.
I didn't know you were taking off your headphones. I thought perhaps we were glitching. Early in our career, if we went to rehearsal with Kilo at the Sound Gallery and there was no weed, we would literally not do anything. That's about it. So I would lose that turn. I lose a turn.
So he, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the story behind that tile.
I got a 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Bryn drops pants, lose a turn. So we both just lost a turn.
We all know about that, right? Well, or maybe not. I don't know. We were playing the Edge Fest. We were an opening act. We had been together, I don't know how long, really a short period of time, a few months. And we opened up the show, and it was kind of Woodstock-esque with the mud. And people started just pummeling us with mud. So I figured, well, guitar necks were getting hit by your hands. The strings were becoming muffled. There's no nothing going on here that can be musical anyway. So I just turned my back to the audience, grabbed my mic with me, pulled my pants down and said, here's something to throw at. And I literally ended up standing in a mound of mud, and it was badass.
A mound of mud.
Mound of mud.
Well, you have a new album coming out. We're going to get into that here. I do some things I thought would be kind of interesting to kind of pick your brain is.
I don't have to bore you with the story of each tile.
Well, no, we'll continue to play.
Up your game.
No, we're going to continue to play, and you're going to tell the stories each. I did not know each tile had a story, so that's even better. So absolutely,
they're all autobiographical. Yeah. All of those tiles.
But we both lost a turn now, so I don't know who gets to go.
See. Did we?
Is the game over?
Yes. Did we really? Did that just happen? Yeah. We both just so nobody can go, right? Too dumb to quit, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
You have found, maybe you haven't noticed this, but you just found a major secret of the design of this game.
Hmm.
Do tell,
enlighten me, yes.
I'm afraid to do it because I kind of want to let people try to experience it maybe, but that you can't win. You might notice.
Oh, I figured that out.
Okay, yeah.
There's no good.
There's not even an end tile. There's nowhere to end.
Well, it's
never
a Monopoly,
ends.
I figure. You just keep, yeah.
It never ends.
Too dumb to quit.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. I know a little bit. Obviously, I know your brother, Kai. How big was your family growing up?
6 people total with 2 parents.
Okay.
Mom and dad.
And where did you fall in
Mother's
line?
Day.
1 through 4?
I am 2nd of 4.
Okay. Now.
Older brother, myself, a younger sister, and a younger brother.
In a wealthy family, yes.
No, absolutely not.
The reason I ask, getting into music, obviously, it's fucking expensive to be a musician.
And back in the early 60s, access was everything. Access dictated the cost. I mean, you had to buy these $25, which was a lot, guitars at Kresge's or Sears or Montgomery Ward's. You would buy these guitars that were, I think, all made by the same manufacturer with these stores' brands on them. It was, and the strings were always higher off the neck. The access to, a Fender Squire today that you can get on a daily basis on your local Craigslist for, I'll just call it $100, give or take.
Yeah.
On a daily basis outweigh the guitars that the people of my generation learned to play on by. It's just crazy, really, to be honest. And the access, they were hard to find. You had to mine for them.
I had to. Westone, do you remember Westone guitars?
Vaguely.
Okay, well, I lived in a town called Owatonna. There was no, guitar center.
They were a metal guitar with a 6 on a side headstock, if I remember right. Kind of the pointy headstock. Westone and a pointy.
Yeah, it was like a Fender kind of shape. They were
an SG meets a Strat or something, right?
I had one. It cost me $400. It was not worth 400 fucking bucks.
Oh, good Lord, no. Yeah,
it was paper route money. That's 10 months of paper route to fucking
really?
Pay for that. But what did you do for like, what was your early jobs that you would do to kind of get money to buy fucking strings were a deal?
Getting strings was an ordeal. I would ride my bike to places to get to strings. I would ask my parents to give me a ride to the two or three, or actually there was a lot more independent guitar stores back then, but it was harder to get to them because nobody had a driver's license or anything even close to that when I started. We would order things from the Sears catalog. And the other place, oddly enough, back then you could get certain odds and ends was a Radio Shack.
Oh. A
place called Radio Shack sold consumer electronics.
I don't understand how that didn't stay in business. I mean, it was such a need for all these little things that you can't get fucking anywhere now but Amazon.
Yep.
And it's just like, fuck. It's and you know, like all these cables and shit. I don't know, whatever.
I know.
Well, then basically, when did you, like, how old are you when you realize this is probably going to be the rest of your life?
That's a really tough tell. But at the latest, seventh grade, at the earliest, fifth grade.
Hmm.
Well, that puts me at sixth grade, doesn't it?
Just on an average?
On an average.
Look, we're better at math than we just said.
Yeah. somewhere in there, it was really early on. I mean, to the point where when I was super young and my family would go to church, John Jovanovich, church, and a new thing back then was folk music revivals. And it would be three people with acoustic guitars playing Kumbaya and Michael Row Your Boat Ashore and things of those nature. And even at that really early point, I was just transfixed on the guitar and how do they do that and watching the shapes and the strumming patterns and seeing rhythm and just seeing how... And I was just totally turned on by it. All that was like the earliest I can remember.
Hmm. When did you become a Kiss fan?
First album, I got it a week before it came out on Columbia House Records.
That's weird.
You'd get back then, you could get advanced copies of things. I wasn't the one who got it. A guy named Johnny Johnson got it and turned us all on to it. But it started out, it was literally like on Columbia House Records, it was listed as, and the way they did it back then, if you bought a record on the inside of the record, on the sleeve, which they ended up outlawing, on the paper sleeve, you would see little albums of releases coming, upcoming releases. The labels would advertise different.
They made that illegal?
They could buy that. Yeah, it became illegal to do that. And
that's weird.
The artists revolted. And, if it was your album and you're advertising other artists, that seems a little cross, bizarre.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, so they won it. But it was so, that was the early version of, if you like this, you might like this. So my friend Johnny Johnson, who had also turned us all on to the Alice Cooper group, right? I mean, the minute Killers came out, which was, what, 71, we were deep into it. So, yeah, then he got the first Kiss record, and I heard it a week before it came out.
When did you stop liking Kiss?
I'm in and out. Yeah. I'm like everybody with everything.
Yeah.
I don't have a Kiss pinball machine like you do. I would love one, though. Who in the world wouldn't?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I can tell you
my least favorite. I think I can get close. It's funny. My least favorite maybe Kiss time periods are hard for me to come up with because if I didn't like it, I didn't pay attention, so I kind of don't know what they are.
Oh, gotcha. Dynasty, Unmasked, Elder, that era?
Dynasty, there's a lot of stuff on there I loved. And I really liked Sure Know Something when that album came out. I liked Hard Times a lot when that album came out. What I really didn't care for was She's So European.
Hmm.
That was a dive for me. That period, the Unmasked period, was a dive for me. I know I liked Revenge. Yeah.
Bob Ezrin was one of the guys you sent an Odd Fathers cassette pack to, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. You ever have you ever actually done any work with Bob or?
Well, just that, no.
Okay.
Well, and then yes, which was also well, I guess so because I was requested to send him music for an upcoming Alice Cooper thing. Excuse me, I'm gassy. And I have this song called When I'm Alone, and it's really creepy. I'm not the same when I'm alone in my desolate world alone. Boom, boom, psh, boom, 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 bah. That kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bob loved it. They might have, for all I know, they might have recorded it. But he called me afterwards, and he's asking me, man, what was the effect you used on your voice? It's just incredible. Was that the Yamaha 1972 PX390? Did I hear a niner in there somewhere? And I said, no, Bob, what I did was I fanned my hand and front of my mouth, between my mouth and the microphone like this. And I said this to him over the phone. I said, I'm not the same when I... And he didn't believe me and thought I was trying to pull a fast one on him and wouldn't tell him what piece of gear I was using for. And I sensed just a tinge of him getting, like, upset at me about it.
Well, you know, it's hard to tell how when a Canadian gets upset, you know what I mean? So, you know, they're a little mild-mannered, so he probably was fuming.
And I was hyper, like, sensitive because it's Bob Ezrin, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
You know, so, my interpretation isn't valid.
I like that approach. I have a song called O Devil, Where Art Thou? And I was looking for a certain sound, and I found it while sticking my finger. And that gave me kind of altered my voice, but I couldn't really sing that way. So I found like a cat toy, a little rubber ball, just smaller than a ping pong ball, stuck it in my cheek.
Yes.
And that did the effect, and it kind of gave me an old dabble. And so neat. I appreciate that.
You actually physically altered yourself. Right. Interesting, to make a different sound. That's an interesting idea. That's Tony Iommi did that too, if I'm not mistaken.
With his fingers?
You were highly influenced by Tony Iommi, I believe.
You know, there's no doubt. I don't know if that's a... I'm wearing a Black Sabbath shirt, but...
And what are the odds? We literally, if we wanted to play more Too Dumb to Quit,
yeah,
board game edition, we...
Yeah, well, I think we've both missed
we
our
turn.
We
have to start over, don't we?
Or do we?
I think so.
All right, let's go back.
Because we froze, didn't we?
Yes. We both...
We didn't win.
Or did we just...
can't win, so... I got a 3 on purple.
So
orange.
Gets on stage.
Gets electrical shock on stage.
Go back to...
We are setting up at the beginning of a show, and... there's a light that needs to be moved, and Cherry's trying to be nice to the light guy, and he's got his bass on, and the guy asks him to move the light, and it's just sitting like on a drum riser, like an open, old-fashioned par can, big, massive thing. Just move it over a foot or something really. Hey, hold on, I'm coming down. I'm going to move that par can on the drum riser over a foot. Cherry's like, oh, I got it. And he grabs it and just, yeah. Oh, could have been a goner.
But you're not done, though.
Somebody literally nailed him.
You had to go back, too. So now we have Promoter Steals Money, and you have to start over.
Well, that's I think that's self-explanatory.
Yeah. I think anybody who's been in a band long enough has experienced that.
And we don't know if steals is actually the right word.
All right.
Look at that. I'm already back to the beginning. This game. It takes great patience and perseverance. Did I say that right? Perseverance.
On stage, feather pillow fight, lose tour. I don't know what that means for me, but tell the story.
We were on tour with Evanescence.
Oh.
And the first night in St. Louis sold out. Great room. And we did our after show pillow fight. And we literally had leaf blowers and shop vacs to clean this up. And our guys could clean it up like nobody's business. The stage was spick and span pretty much.
Yeah.
Flat feathers everywhere else. I mean, literally feathers everywhere else. And we get done with the show, and we killed them. I mean, the crowd just loved us. We did a fantastic show and really went off huge. And we're walking back to our bus, and the road manager, Cole Cox, my road manager, Sean Walgren, in the back of a head with a closed-fisted punch. Bill of Coin happened to be with us on that particular show. It was the kickoff for the tour. And
so this is the first show of the tour.
Yeah, it was the first show of the tour. We got kicked off that night. And Bill, I remember talking to the agent on the telephone in the back lounge of the bus and saying to the agent, well, you said what you wanted was a rock and roll band to open up for him, right? And Bill was handled it so, like, impressively. Like, just he handled it so perfectly because he was 100% correct. But we got kicked off the tour, and it was literally like Danny Goldberg put us on the tour, and it was literally like right when Evanescence had whatever the name of their hit song
Bring
was.
Me Back to Life or something like that.
And the real issue, without question, was the fact that good luck following this. I know that's what really happened.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of stories of that kind of stuff, and I've never seen Evanescence live. I'm guessing it's a more subdued show than a flip show, and it probably wasn't just the pillow fight. It was probably everything else that was going on from beginning to end. Very entertaining band.
Yeah, we pulled a lot of onstage shenanigans, but as far as total professionalism, showing up on time, our crew's always being at the very top of the heap and all together on everything. We've always had the best, I mean, you know, the best road guys there is with us. We were, we ran it like a perfectly, we ran it great. We weren't a bunch of skirt-chasing, drugged-out knuckleheads. That's not what Flip was at all. We were on it. We were spot on it. But the funny thing was, is we would pull these onstage shenanigans, and we would get all the world's biggest managers in the world because we'd make some kind of splash, and then we'd do the next one, and they couldn't handle it, and they'd quit.
I have to ask everybody I talk to nowadays because it's a fucking thing, but how about backing tracks? You guys use a bunch of those?
No, quite the opposite. There were members of the band that we made sure weren't plugged in. No, if anything, we were subtractive in that manner.
All right.
Kai might not have always, his guitar might not have always been plugged in.
Have you ever canceled a show to watch a basketball game?
No. No.
I don't know if you heard about that, but what's his name? The fucking country guy, Eric Church. He canceled like 4 days before a Saturday show. He canceled it so he could watch the final four.
Well, that's his prerogative, I guess, isn't it? Yeah. We can make our own assessment on that and move forward.
Yeah, anybody who listens to our show has heard me bitch about that enough. So I just I was adding that for your clarity. You got a run of shows coming up with Ace Frehley. You got any big surprises planned for that? I think it's
surprises.
Starting next
weekend. You know, you don't really plan a surprise, do you? Maybe you do. We're very spontaneous, and the little treadmill with the hamster in it is always running that has the words on it, what if, what if, what if. So it's a never-ending process. So surprises, I'm sure there's never a time where there isn't one, so to speak. But there's a number of things in the hamster wheel.
Now, his band, they're these guys out of Nashville. Do you happen to know them? I mean, they're
really
fucking phenomenal.
Really quite well. I know Jeremy and Philip really well. Unfortunately, Philip won't be there with the dates that we're playing. And, of course, one of my heroes, Night Bob, is their front of house.
Oh.
Guy and all-around road manager, esky guy, and... He was Flip's tour manager for quite a period, and so that's going to be awesome. So he's going to actually be mixing us for these shows, so we're going to get a killer mix.
Yeah.
And Night Bob and I talk quite often on the, you know, on the messenger video phone, and that's a big part of it for me. And actually, he's been really helping me out with, because there's a really good chance we'll be doing more Ace shows after this too.
Right on.
Really good chance. But Night Bob is helping me out, which with what venues he likes, you know, he has an affinity for, and then suggests those venues to me. So we're fortunate in that. I'm kind of picking the shows based on some of the recommendations of the classic value of some of the venues.
Right on.
And why not? I mean, dude, I'm 61 years old. At this point, the whole question changes. The question used to be, is this gig, you know, financially viable? How do we, what are, you know, merch, we need this, you know, what are all the angles? We need this, that, and everything, all the angles you can imagine. And now today, for a rock and roll band worth its salt, it's really, okay, you're 61 years. If you don't do it and you can do it, and I'm here to tell you folks, Flip can frickin' do it. Check out the new album, Flip, Too Dumb to Quit. I'm here to tell you it's the best thing we've ever done, without question. As a whole, I love a lot of classic songs. That's a hard statement to make, but it's a great record. You're gonna love it. And so yeah, there you have it. I went off on a tangent there. I just brain farted. Now coffee drink. How you doing, buddy?
Too Dumb to Quit seems like a good transfer to. Let's play another roll again.
Okay, roll again. Yeah. I'm rolling the two dice. I roll a 6, 7, 8, 9. So glad he was moving it for me.
Sound guy blows the power. Start over.
God.
All right.
Jovanovic. Gum.
What's the story here?
Gum. Oh, there's too many. I won't even tell one individual story. I could just, how about if randomly throughout the rest of this talk, I just like, you'll hear me spurt out names in the background. Those are all the different people that happened with.
Sounds good. I got it. I'll gum. Fucking 11. 1, 2, 3.
What kind of 11?
8, 9, 10. You'll fucking 11. It's like, I don't even know. What is a fucking 11? Show up to the wrong venue, lose game. Hey, there's an end.
It happened, and I don't really remember a whole lot about it other than we were at the wrong place at the wrong time. Like a day too early at the wrong club.
So,
we were the reason it doesn't stand out super great is anything traumatic, because it wasn't. We actually had more time than we thought, and we just had to go to the other side of town.
Okay.
Yeah. So what? But what is the?
I have
you lost the game because of nothing.
You won.
That is the perfect. That is the perfect rock and roll act. Anecdote, is that right?
Anecdote. Well, let's talk about the record a little bit. You know, you never really came across as much of a gear guy, but you clearly have to use some kind of stuff. What kind of...
I've become one.
So let's talk a little bit. Are you using your Coyote exclusively, or what?
Yes. Yep.
And then what do you plug it into? Do you just custom?
On the album, there are two amplifiers I use. One is called a Custom 200 amplifier. It is a two-channel, four knobs per channel, like a bright bass treble and volume, solid-state power, with a 4x12 custom PA cabinet. It is vertical 4x12, not a square cabinet with two and two, so it's, you know, 12-inch on top of 12-inch stacked, which is so much more sense than having four speakers blowing at your waistline.
Yeah.
They're literally at perfect ear level, like a PA is designed to be. It just dumbfounds me. Like, everything should be like that.
Yeah.
And 200-watt head, solid state, like peak to peak. So it's really, they're really 100 watts, and they're not even 100 watts. And I've been using them for years. I've had over 100 of them. Different custom amplifiers. I'm a custom amplifier nerd. And then the other amp I used quite a bit is called a Barclay. It's a solid state combo with a 6-inch speaker in it that my wife got on Craigslist neighborhood free.
Okay. Now, this sounds like your kind of gear, honestly. Like,
it's what I use. So I am obsessed. I was already in a discussion about it this morning with a friend of mine, Clay Howard, about under $100 1960s-ish and 70s-ish, because that was the period, solid-state amps.
The solid-state kind of, I would have pegged you for a tube guy, because you are kind of a classic, but...
No, all 100%. And I'm here to tell you, the first Flip album, the Walt Disney album, is custom amps. The only time I didn't use them was when I was working with Art Alexakis. And which was a curious thing for I Still Love Rock and Roll and Freak. In the control room, he had a Line 6 2x12 amp, which was a brand new thing then. And on top of it, the guys brought in two different Plexi Marshall heads. And I went in to do the guitar that day, and he had me plug into the Line 6. On those two particular songs, I'm playing one of the first versions of a 2x12 Line 6 modeling amp, when sitting right on top of it were 1960s era Plexi Marshalls. Think about it.
Where was the record recorded?
That was at a place called, like, the Chinese Noodle Factory, which was something like that. It was the name of the studio.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Portland, Oregon. The new Flip record?
Too Dumb to Quit. Sorry.
That's okay. My apologies. At Creation Audio with, Creation Studios with producer John Fields.
It sounds very cohesive, like, you know, these songs were written and recorded to be this album. Because a lot of artists nowadays, they go in and do things quick, or the one song at a time, go to a different studio or something like that. Did you have everything written and go in and like, just classic style, bang it all out?
I don't
out?
Know any other way, really, to do it, so I guess so. I guess you would consider that a classic style. The only thing that's changed with... Great. So that's a really kind of hard question to answer in one sentence, because Greg specifically...
Use two sentences.
Use two. I'll use both of them. I'm going to use both sentences. Greg and I have been playing together since like around 1979. So we have a never-ending developing, and even though we stopped playing together for a long period of time, it takes right off where we have such a history that it's like riding a bike together. No time had passed. It just began to develop probably even a healthier direction than it would have had we not split up for a while, because we both come to certain understandings. I think we're both back to the roots of what we loved about what it is without really clogging it up with a bunch of preconceived bullshit. So it's kind of like starting over again, but only like, God, if I could just go back to high school again. It's almost like that. And Kilo and Greg and I both have the same thing with Kilo. So what was the question, even though I know
basically
this,
like, yeah, what did you kind of piecemeal the recording over time, or did you kind of like, once you had all the songs, go into the studio and just finish the whole record?
The approach to recording it too, in the old-fashioned, what you called an old school way to do it. Yes, we would play the songs live together. A couple of them came right off the cuff, like literally while we were just standing around, you know, passing a joint, and kind of making and jamming, you know, like in some sort of, you know, a Flip version of Deep Purple or Led Zeppelin or something version of the how we jam, you know.
Yeah.
Because Greg Kilo and I, like I was You know, I can just go off into creative never land, and those guys somehow instinctively know exactly where to go, which is a double fold thing, because it means what I'm doing makes sense to somebody. So it encourages me to keep going. It makes me, I don't hit a roadblock. Like all of a sudden the German bass player don't stop and go, what the fuck are you doing, man? It's like they can play, they play right into it, which then increases me just to keep, to keep a building, and they're just on it, and before you know it, they're doing something so good that, you know, they're just covering for me at it, almost at some point. So the cohesiveness that's of this album, I don't think is any different than the cohesiveness of I Wish I Was a Planet. Some of the more rocking things, because, you know, and we got to do our New York Dolls thing. It really wasn't fully represented on the first album. It was when we recorded it in Seattle, but is our new love for the New York Dolls. And with What the Fuck, we have a total like New York Dolls personality crisis kind of vibe going on that song. And that's really cool to have been able to do that.
I do. I like the record a lot. It is very different from previous Flip albums. I can jokingly say it almost as if like you guys took a 20-year break and then came back and did this.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah, I know.
That is what happened. And COVID didn't hurt us in that way.
I suppose.
So basically, we finished this at what I guess you would at this point, you know, I'm no weatherologist, but or whatever you want to call it, germologist, but let's revert back to the beginning of the interview, the count to four thing.
Yeah.
But that being said, most of this stuff was conceptualized during that time period and then recorded just during towards the tail end of it, I guess. And it didn't hurt us in that aspect.
No, are you the principal songwriter again? These are mainly your
yes.
songs?
Yes.
One thing I was thinking about, you know, kind of relating to some of my own experiences is that, like, I struggled being, because I was like the kind of like you with my band Jesus Christ, or I was the guy who wrote all the songs, and I always tried to please people. Like, it felt like I was competing against them, even though they never really were. You know what I mean? Like, do you like the song? Like it. And then I worked with a guy named we called him Rev. Jesus Christ, I can't remember his real name, but he was the one who he just.
I
pointed.
Remember somebody named Rev. Either that, or that's a common nickname.
It could be. I don't, he wasn't with us too long, but he was the one that kind of pointed out. Is like, well, that's you. That's your job. You know, we're here to kind of to work on these things. So it turns out. You know, my question here, Bryn, is did you ever have that kind of feeling like, you know, because you've been kind of the creative force in almost everything you've done, the person that drives that, did you ever feel like you almost had to be a people pleaser with the band, or you just say, this is it, fuck it if you're having
an
issue
with
it?
I am a natural born people pleaser, first and foremost, so that's all inclusive in my everyday life and everything I do and not, you know, just my band.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the dynamic I think that I perceive in that situation is if I do something that turns Cherry on, we'll do it again.
Okay.
It's that simple, or Kilo for that, you know, not to exclude Kilo at all from that. If those two guys get turned on by something I'm doing, we do it. And it's kind of great just to have that. You know, you could call it all sorts of fun things, but for the sake of this fun conversation, we'll call it a bullshit meter.
Yeah, I get that.
Editor.
I got caught up in what you were saying there. I can't remember where I was segueing to.
But if Cherry grabs onto something musically, it usually means he's finding some sort of hooky vocal thing to go with what I'm trying to do, because I'm the world's worst singer in the world, and he might be the world's best. So it's like this totally stupid thing. So if it's like all something that he can really jump into, it'll definitely put gas in the tank.
Right on. What inspires you to write songs? Because you know, you get older and you're driven by different things. Like do I do just pop to you, or do you actually sit down and kind of work something out? Or
no, the song drives me, and watching where the song is going to end up and best serving it till the very end of its creation is my thing. I love to like have a concept. I'll have maybe a rough concept, like What the Fuck, for instance.
Yeah.
I had that written down, and I'm like, one day I'm going to write a song called What the Fuck. And then another day, I went, God, I want to write a Johnny B. Goode song. It was the first song I ever learned on guitar. I love it so much to this day.
I'm so glad you said that.
I can turn it on anytime. It's one of the very few songs that I can turn on.
By Judas Priest, right?
Oh, good Lord, no. That's one of the few songs I can leave. That's like the polar opposite that I can leave on for any extended time.
Yeah, okay. So that intro is somewhat inspired.
The whole thing is top right down to the bottom. Kind of Johnny B. Goode song, and I have this thing called What the Fuck. Okay, there's two ideas I can put together. And then one day I just start riffing at rehearsal on a and I just start going, What the Fuck? And I just start mumbling whatever's into the microphone. And our stage manager, Johnny Mack, breaks out his telephone, videotapes it, and sends it to me the next day. And if it's something worthwhile, I have it on my phone. And if Greg and Kilo bring it up the next day, then we jam on it more. I do another little phone video of it. Then I take home, and first thing I do is write down what it sounds like I'm saying. I don't think about what it is I want to say. I think about what it is it sounds like I'm trying to say.
All right, got it. I don't recall. I'm pretty sure I'm spot on, but there's more ripping kind of guitar lead work on this record than previous albums.
Cool.
That was a nice surprise. Cool. Is that you? Is that mono? Or
no, that's all me.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Forgive me. That sounded.
Like I understood. Yeah.
Onerous. Mono's full and clear, owner and clear on this album. You know, he did a fantastic freaking job, so I'd never want to diminish that situation. But yeah, so I've done a lot of studio guitar work over the years, and it's just something I guess I've kind of had. And, you know, maybe to be honest, there's a portion of it, like Rattling Bones was more based in that direction. Our New York, Greg and I's, Cherry and I's New York City band, was more kind of deep purpley, and I did a lot more of that sort of thing. And then with Flip, I kind of just wanted to back away from the more bluesy based, what became called blues based. Yeah. That still doesn't make sense to me at
me either,
all.
By the way.
I would never like hear a blues riff and equate it to that any more than I would so many other things that that title has never sat comfortably with me. But that being said, at this point, you know, once again, COVID does come back into it, but, you know, screw the whole thing. And I just started jamming a lot more at rehearsal. So it present, you know, we did, I had a lot more, to be honest with you, joint smoking jamming going on at rehearsal. And I just started to do it more. And, you know, Greg would just, like, we'd be jamming, and he'd look at me, and he'd make, like, lead guitar solo faces while he was playing bass. He'd look at me and go, like, jam, dude, do your thing, do that. And he'd even, he can do, like, physical mannerisms at me that are telling me, like, you know, that thing you do that goes, ba-ka-ba-ka-ba-ka-ba-now, like, do that. I can tell he's telling me what to play. And before you know it, it's like, I'm down with this. And I'm really down with it because, I don't know, I might not be aware, but it appears as, like, as though it's not being done much. I could be wrong. You know, the whole kind of, like, soloing thing.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to be the guitar, the lead guitar solo as a form of a stylistic expression in rock music has become passé to what I'll call guitar dog tricks. Pet tricks.
Got it. There is
the soul is gone, not gone, but I just it's I don't
well,
witness
in,
it.
Well, in mainstream
often.
Pop music, especially, it seems like the guitar is
coffee's working.
Oh, right on. It seems like the guitar has basically been put out to the side anyway. But
yeah, I just don't hear what I would call a sense of guitar player in guitar recording so much. The one place I definitely did hear it was in, what's Josh Homme's band?
Oh, Queens of the Stone Age.
Queens of the Stone Age, real guitar personality. In
yeah.
That, you know, really cool and not too overblown. Of course, we heard it a lot in Soundgarden. That was one of the cool things about the whole Seattle movement, frankly, was there was a lot of personality in those mm-hmm. bands. You could really hear Jerry Cantrell, who is one of Mono's all-time favorites, Eric Vobeda.
He might be the last guitar hero.
And, you know, and Mike, shit.
Mike McCready?
Mike McCready, I do work with him. I feel so bad. Total brain fart, coffee, post-interview, weed, brain fart. Mike McCready is freaking awesome. I mean, he might be my favorite lead guitar player right now.
He is amazing.
Just him and Mike Campbell. Mike Campbell from Tom Petty's band. Because really,
a lot of people drop his name, but he's solid.
It really becomes,
he was just in town.
Not a matter of what you can or can't do, because the truth is, if you want to sit down with something long enough, you can get to a place where you can do it. And that's why I call them pet tricks. Because you're just, it's repetitive. It's not really coming from other place. It's coming from somewhere else. And
I think a lot of that 80s hair metal, the guitar players kind of fall under that
probably
description. You know, I know that's kind of my feel. Like, there's a couple of them that I think really offered something unique.
Jazz but, guitar players fall under that.
Well, I don't know that much about jazz, but so I'll leave them alone. But
there's a few country guys that kind of pull that game, but it's like, whereas I can hear Ace Frehley do a simple bend, or Paul Kossoff do a single simple bend, and like, you know, like you go, it makes you like physically respond, like you make the lead guitar player face, and you kind of like, you tense your muscles up a little bit, and it's like, God, that's badass. You know? And I'm just not really getting that out of most of them. Okay, I'll shut up now.
Well, let's get back to Too Dumb to Quit. How important is sequencing to you when you finish a record?
Not critical, but it needs to be looked at. I mean, you want the, you want a song that you think works good as a first song, and you want a song that's neat as a last song. I am a fan of the original format where there was a break between side one and two, more than a continuum. I like the, when you flipped an album over, that act that created an intermission.
Yeah.
And deciding what, and you really thought maybe you were really doing something when you started it on side two instead of side one. You know, I think I like side two better than side one.
I definitely had plenty of records growing up. That was the case, you know.
You couldn't help but go there, you know. Well, you know, it's the natural in your thing in your brain to be combative, so and to put them in boxes. So I think I like side two better than side one. Why do you even bother figuring out which one you like better? But
do you visually like you can close your eyes and almost your brain puts side one and two in a certain spot for different records? Because to me, like
definitely. And you wonder if they were made that way. Like side two would be mellower. Per se, like for instance, you know, like I definitely remember records where side two was like, you know, would have three mellower songs on it that weren't on side one. Like I would put 80s UFO in that category, maybe just off the top of my head, or late Thin Lizzy.
I think albums that came out during the CD era, I have I definitely struggle a little more to recall certain song titles than I do, and then part of that's age, but a lot of it is that, like, because with a record, you'd actually look, it would say track one, but it would have the title right next to it. When you got the CD, most CD players were just like track one, track two, and it almost became, play the third song, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely, you would do that.
But I'll tell you, with Too Dumb to Quit, this album's going to be a grower for me, I can already tell, but side two, that's where it kicks up for me. That's honestly the last five songs. It was starting with track six. I got the titles here.
Cool. We should actually Unreal. Does side two start with Unreal?
Yes, it does. That run of songs there, Unreal, In Your Eyes, Will There Always Be Love?
Brand New Day and Time to Travel.
Who's singing on Brand New Day, by the way? Is that Cherry?
Da-da-da-da-da-da. We turned the microphone over to Cherry Forever for Brand New Day.
Okay, because you almost sounds like it's you doing it a little differently, but go ahead.
Let's talk about Cherry.
Now, is that how his family introduces him?
As Cherry?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's happened. Cherry can make it happen, girl.
That's a really cool song.
So, okay, here's a funny joke with Cherry. Oh, I have one of the funniest road stories. I think it is the funniest road story of my personal experience with Cherry. But how we knew we should be playing Noodling on You Can Make It Happen Some More, like the next day, was I got to rehearsal and Cherry looks at me and he goes, "Girl," and I went, "What?" Anyway, "Girl." So we all get into the room, plug in on our stuff. He's talking to other people. We're all doing our thing. And that's how I know to play it some more. because he thought girl was funny.
Well, that beginning almost has like a Bob O'Reilly kind of vibe to it.
I don't think I can play and sing. I was going to like be super like cool and like pick up the guitar and like try to sing something really awesome, but I don't know if I have it in me. A photograph of a pretty face in a better time, but everything looks better from the outside. I'm letting go. Yeah, I know it ended in a tragedy, wasted time in misery. I know it was time to travel. Oh, 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 it was time. It was time. It was time to travel.
Aw.
Aw.
Now,
gotta have no voice.
Those lyrics, that of course is "Time to Travel," the last song in the record.
I never had a voice. Let's be honest here.
You and me both. metaphor for is that a strutter guitar pick? I just grabbed some.
It's a Skid Row guitar pick. Oh. No wonder I was making flubs.
Yeah.
I should have been playing the. I don't know, Richie Blackmore pick. I would have made that one flub.
You remember them?
Copé?
Oh, Nuke Capé music. I had my glasses on. Remember Nuke Capé?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
But that looks different than that. That's not Nuke Capé, that's Copé. Maybe it's Nuke Copet music. It's got a phone number. We could call and ask.
There's no area code either, right?
And it says here on there, right underneath the number, that we shouldn't do it quickly or slowly. We should do it at a medium pace.
Oh, right on. Okay. I'll keep that in mind with all aspects of life.
That's for the tempo of the song, remember, not the...
Yeah,
so that this is for specifically medium tempo songs.
This whole album is kind of a little more medium tempo than like
is there's it? Yeah, I guess
there's no Schizo Boy, there's no you're a different
well,
person.
Well, there's what
now.
The fuck.
By the way, I have to tell you, my wife,
which is very kind of hairdo. Mm-hmm. It's what I would call novelty, like Schizo Boy. I would ultimately, I think, like if I was looking at it from the outside, it was somebody else. I would say that's their novelty songs. So I guess in that case, yeah, it'd be what the fuck. So
my wife loves the fucking song. By the way, she wanted me to say.
Oh, that pleases me.
Yeah, so she
doesn't suck.
She
goes good with a cup of coffee.
She likes to imagine walking onto the sales floor with a theme song, and she's like, I could see this. This is my new theme song.
That'd be awesome.
Well, I don't know that her employer is going to allow that, but...
let's fake it and let's make a short little clip.
Yeah, I should, actually. I can do that. A little slow-motion power walk. All right. Well, let's get into some of these other tracks. I just, it came out yesterday, so forgive me. I'm going to have to rely on you to be the expert on these things. It opens up with
God, that's it. Good luck with that.
You Can Make It Happen. Kind of has a classic Flip vibe, but again, it's
That's
you're into
way
like,
towards my favorite for the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm just so happy.
If I had to pick one, it'd probably be Unreal.
So happy. Oh, that's cool.
But I can already tell. I when I listen to music now, I kind of know my tendencies. Like sometimes I can tell.
Oh, they totally they go. I know, it's insane, right?
Sometimes I hear a record like these three songs I'm going to listen to for the rest of my life, and the rest of this I'll probably never.
And now
check
you
out.
Don't want to ever even hear those three songs.
Yeah,
I know it so well, and you feel almost like uninformed that you didn't catch how great these songs were the first time through, right? That's how I have felt.
You reminded me of the guitar I got from you.
The black Telecaster,
yes.
With a killer neck.
Oh, yeah, that's where I was going.
I built another guitar, and I kind of wished I had it for a moment in my brain. when I was putting the guitar together, I'm like, fuck, I kind of wish I had that Telly.
It's my A guitar now. I've never liked the look or style of Fenders. They just never appealed to me. I don't like single coil. This does have a humbucker in it. That helps.
Yeah.
But that neck,
it's
I'm like,
EMG.
What the fuck was wrong with me? The guitar is perfectly balanced. It plays better
than
the
Telecaster is the Desert Island guitar. There's no two. Nobody could ever argue. It's right down the line. It's like you get part Gibson. It's right down the line. Like if they made the perfect amp that was half Fender and half Marshall, which is so insane. Everybody's been trying. Just isn't doable. You're better off buying one of each. And but the Telecaster literally bridges the gap like so perfectly. It's just great. I mean, you can play. God, they're great. It's the perfect guitar. And dude, you can get them any day on your local Craigslist for under I'm trying to put the word under and 100 together, for under $100.
And I grew up in an era too where you would, like, my first guitar, the action was probably I think it was like three thumbs off the neck. You know, it's just like. And it, in a way, I'm almost glad I went through that.
No question.
You know, but at the same time.
I wouldn't trade it for the world.
It was around 1990, it seemed like. They figured out how to fucking make a guitar that was actually playable and cheap. You know, and I don't
or
know.
Or they just finally did. You're right. Something happened big time.
But
probably it's probably a manufacturing end or, you know what it was, dude? The baby boom.
Yeah,
that's what it was. All of a sudden, you had a mass audience. All of a sudden, there was more people interested in it than there ever had been before, simply because there was more people.
Well, the 80s did kind of spawn
absolutely
a lot of guitar kind of,
And I would say, I would still put that in the baby boomers.
Sure.
You know, the wave that created by the baby boomers, no question about it. Thank goodness for that. I think that has a lot to do with, the whole audience almost, the real rock and roll. Do new people come in and out? Yeah, but, the core audience of rock and roll is really kind of based off of the baby boomer time frame.
Too Dumb to Quit is out and available everywhere, streaming, obviously. You have CDs available through Bandcamp?
Yeah, everything will be available from digital downloads to freaking vinyl.
When's the
and
vinyl
the vinyl's going to be really cool. I believe there's game pieces coming with the vinyl in the form of like individual guitar picks.
Oh, there's the Kiss influence.
I guess.
The package, all the crap.
Yes. I always thought that was cool. Yeah. Alice Cooper was the first guy I was ever aware of.
Fair enough.
Yeah, we're with Billion Dollar Babies with the dollar bill and the breakout cards. And, of course, the Beatles did it. I mean, Kiss weren't the first, but they were the best. There's no two ways about it.
As far as putting the freebies in there?
Yeah, no question. Treating it like a box of cereal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good. I was going with Cracker Jacks, but I like the cereal analogy better.
Same thing. Yeah. Cracker Jacks was probably first. I'll bet cereal got it from Cracker Jacks, right? I mean, if we think about it just for a second, wouldn't Cracker Jacks been first, like at the baseball?
Yeah, it had to be.
Yeah, then cereal went, hey, that.
Do you know Cracker Jacks doesn't put anything in there now?
No, I didn't know that, but I don't have any problem with Cracker Jacks.
Yeah.
I think they're delicious.
We really need to break down this Cracker Jack thing.
Well, I'm just going to remind you that I did not. I mean, I want to be clear on this, really clear. I did not smoke pot on the way here.
Okay.
So that and how that has nothing to do with why Cracker Jacks are appealing to me right now.
All right. Well, that's good to know. The whole title, Too Dumb to Quit, I think anybody that has gotten into music, played music, and stuck with it kind of can relate. You know, it's a very relatable title because I think about that myself, too. You know, I run into some of my old friends from back when I was actually more active in playing in bands.
Yeah.
And it's just like we're kind of the same fucking person. You know, nothing's really – we're older, maybe married, maybe kids, but really nothing else. It's like the
I know. It's almost interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
How it's managed to keep us this pulled into it.
Yeah.
You know, like all of a sudden becoming a fan of fishing or golf or whatever. There are certain things that pull you in all the way.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's interesting that you use those analogies, fishing and golfing, because I actually use those words to...
Surfing is a great one.
Amy, you've been down in my basement. I have a little recording studio down there. But when I work on music, the podcast, not so much, but music, like, I'll be editing or you know, getting into the stages of working on a song, getting it to where I want to master it or whatever, I'll be down there for fucking hours.
Oh, no question. And it's so enjoyable.
Well, right. But it draws you in almost like a casino. You lose track of time.
No question. That's a good analogy. Just like a casino.
Yeah.
That is what it's like. Your tunnel vision. I feel like a horse with the blinders on, where I literally am so focused in to it. Or I always wondered if women who crochet or knit or almost video game-esque, if I watch myself editing audio and I race to hit stop before and get it back as quick as I can and grab my guitar as fast as I can. And I don't think it's a whole lot different than drive it around the corner, shoot the guy with the money. You know, I think it's kind of the same.
Yeah.
I'll bet the same chemical release in your brain.
Look at the two of us. So all of a sudden our eyebrows are perked up a little higher. It's just like you feel that adrenaline and... But I told my wife.
I was editing video this morning before I came over.
All right.
Yeah.
But I told Amy, like, I don't hunt. I don't fish. This is what I do.
Yes.
If anything, you know, it's kind of a bonus for you because, you know, right where I'm at, I'm just downstairs.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of annoying when you go to bed alone and I show up 4 hours later. But, you know.
I'm the other way. I love editing really early in the morning when nobody else is awake.
Okay.
And then they get up, and I stay up for a little while. Then I take a nap. They start their day. Then I wake up a couple hours later, and I go back to it.
All right. I forgot. We went from Cracker Jacks to that. So, yes. I didn't have, like you, any marijuana today.
I got nothing for that. Other than I'm looking at a display case in the corner here. It's got the KISS lunchbox with thermos, the KISS Viewmaster, and these things look like they're in really good shape. A collection of the KISS cards. I'm going to guess it's a full set. I am seeing the KISS on Tour board game. That'd be interesting to compare to the Flip Too Dumb to Quit game.
I had more fun with this.
The Flip game was based on the Beatle game Flip Your Wig, oddly enough. And we even discussed about calling the album Flip Your Wig, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, Husker Du did we thought, well, maybe Flip Your Lid. And we're just like, no, everything's too close. Really didn't last much more than as long as I just had said it just now. But we did think about it. And then I just... You know, I mentioned Flip Too Dumb to Quit, and everybody's like, yes, perfect. It's a board game. You're too dumb to quit, just like rock and roll. It's just a metaphor, and it's just things, those things just fell onto each other.
Who shot the photo? That's really a nice picture.
Thank you. Blake Bogdanovich. It's like untouched, total raw photo, nothing done to it. I believe a little bit of color correction, but I don't even think that. I think the guy's such a good, real old school photographer from L.A. He's done tons of album covers, tons of shit that you know of. All the first KISS reunion 96 shit, like with the bird and all that. That's all Blake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and he's from here, then moved to L.A. for 40 years, I think, or something, then ended up moving back, and he shot that for me.
That looks great.
And, yeah, really, what's really cool about it is anything you see done to the photo that most people of this day and age are accustomed to that happen in a post-production fashion, this wasn't done that way. This was done with the camera, old school, and then really no post-production done to the photograph after it was taken. It was just popped down there and framed. My brother Kai Arnes designed the album cover. I don't take any credit for it other than I hired Blake. I put the team together, asked Kai if he wanted to do it because I knew it was right up his alley. Yeah. I had the concept Too Dumb to Quit. I had the board game concept. I had all, Blake in line, and everybody loved the idea. And that's it right here. I'm super happy with it. And because it sucks to put, you know, to put out an album that you're not happy of the name, like later on, God, I hate the name of that album. Why did I name it that? Because I have that feeling towards Volume.
Yeah.
Because out of the four album titles that were delivered for that to be chosen from, they chose that one.
Well, and, do you remember the other three?
Binder Gun. Finger Bang.
You want another cup?
No, okay. I've had too much. Okay. It's really a reflex among.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
Finger Bang. The Best of the Worst of.
Yeah.
Flip Alive 2, T-O-O.
Now, you mentioned the Best of the Worst of.
No, I'm making just those up on the spot.
I think you kind of forecasted the general tone of this record with the was it The Ride? That was the
new, yeah. Yeah, that was the first.
That kind of, because that's a little mellower than a lot of the classic flip stuff.
Yeah.
By the way, the record sounds fucking pristine. I'm talking about Too Dumb to Quit. The mix is just, it's just a joy to listen to. I can't wait for the vinyl, to be honest with you.
John Fields is no slouch, and dude, those are first or second takes of a song, usually a second take because a microphone was being adjusted, of the whole band with no punching in, no fancy cakes, no nothing. There were a few overdubs on a few of the songs, but, I mean, the basic track, even of everything, was just first or second take, boom, boom, boom. So it's not like there's a bunch of voodoo going on at all. That's really what you get with the chemistry that Flip has.
Promote yourself, Bryn.
Google Flip Too Dumb to Quit. More links will come up than you care to know about. I'm not going to give you a specific one to click on.
When is Flip? Are you bringing FlipCentral.com back?
That would be great, actually. I wouldn't hate if a retro, if that came back up just for people to look at, just as a silly, like, no, that would be cool.
Now, Randy did all that, right?
Yeah, that would be awesome if Randy did that. Come on, Freaky Useless from Flip.
Oh, God.
He played on I Still Love Rock and Roll and Freak, and yeah, that's all freaky on that.
You know, that's an interesting point, because this is Greg's first, Cherry Forever. This is his first record back since the first one, right?
Lead vocal?
No, he was on the first album, but wasn't it...
Yeah, but a ton of Blow It Out Your Ass, our third album. He's on a ton of that because a lot of that was recorded before it came out. And we put out the EP, Flip Live, in a cereal box.
Oh, sure.
That's why I call it... That's a hard one to call, but it was super cool. So, he was on a ton of that. But yeah, since then, you are correct. He didn't play.
You guys reunited, though, he's been back.
He didn't play on Volume, and he didn't do all the touring that took place during all that time period. Yeah. Well, I had played with him up until that point, like I said earlier, from like 1979. So when he showed up today, when he showed up that day to rehearsal, and we were literally going on tour 2 or 3 days later with, I believe it was Cheap Trick. For some reason, Stone Temple Pilots keeps coming to my brain. I'm not 100% sure which one it is. And he came up shaking and said, this is it. This is the end of the line for me. I can't do anymore, which I immediately thought was really weird because things were just starting to go really well. But I turned to him and I said, dude, I've been playing with you since 1979. Whatever you need to do is totally cool with me. I'll take care of my end. You just do whatever you gotta do. I can't like criticize you for this decision, and I'm not gonna. And that was that. And Freaky Useless, who was then our drum tech at the time, because I knew he could play drums as well as bass.
He played Kilo, one show, didn't he?
Because Kilo was gonna have a baby.
There we go.
Kilo was going to have a baby, so we hired a drum tech that could. And I think kind of Freaky kind of ended up stage managing, basically. And, yeah. So when that happened, I'm like, dude, Step on in. Let's jam. Want to jam?
You know, the weird, it's something with your bass players because, like, you know, Cherry, like, until you guys reunited, I only had that image of him from back in the day. And he was, you know, obviously had long hair, did more of an androgynous
yeah.
look, that kind of thing. Same with Freaky. I actually had him on the podcast last summer, and I cannot see that guy in Cherry from like 1999. And same with Freaky. He's sitting right in front of me. And I'm like, I don't fucking see anything. It's like the face, nothing. It's not just the hair. It's like, it's just,
that's cool.
They're fucking chameleons.
That's cool. How about me? How about me? How do I?
You stick out like, probably you look like this when you were born. I'm guessing your hair is out. And
I guess.
Although, you know what? The pictures of you from the Obsession days. Are a little like it's like I'm like, oh, that's him, you know. It takes me a second, you know.
Yeah, but God, I look like my son in those, not to get silly, yeah. But yeah, what? Good Lord, I see some of those pictures and I go, holy crap, it looks like Felix.
That's a
Felix LaRue.
I like that.
Yeah. I have this strange thing for picking baby names, which is I say them to myself like a baseball announcer, and if they come back good, I like that name, like Felix LaRue, and I go, oh yeah, that works. Daisy Lovey, yes, that works.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. I hope people listening to this are convinced to give the new record a couple spins. Like you said, we are just basically in that day and age now where it's just fucking type it into Google. You'll find what you're looking for. I'll make sure people know when the vinyl comes out. We have a decent amount of our listeners are vinyl collectors.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. As everybody knows, there's the vinyl. Everybody knows, right? You know, the vinyl holdup, it takes a really long time to get your vinyl delivered to you. There are new factories opening up all the time, which I also looked into doing. I'm like, well, if there's so many and nobody can do it, how do we open one? You know, it just seems obvious to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Jack White owns one, and he actually recently put out like a very succinct 30-second message where he asked like major record labels, like, build your own plants. Go back to the way it was. This is clearly not going away. You know, because he's like, anybody can come to him. He's like, my company will print, will do it for anybody. But I actually am asking the big record labels, let's put some money into this and get it taken care of. So
totally.
It is kind of silly. But
it's like, yes, okay. Freaking awesome.
All right. Well, thank you again so much for your time. And everybody check out the new Flip record, Too Dumb to Quit. And I'll also recommend go back, check out their whole history if you're not familiar with them. Just a great band. If for people new to it, I'll have some snippets in here, but very much like a hard rock Cheap Trick vibe to some of your earlier stuff. This record to me is probably more in line with that comparison. But you brought up a couple things that I hadn't thought about, like the New York Dolls thing with what the
fuck. There's always been a Dolls vibe. The one that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because you have more of a punk kind of approach than Cheap Trick, I think.
Well, that's hard to say because, God, that first album is so raucous. But and now the 97 album, some of that stuff is so, you know, for lack of a better term, punk. But maybe... what was I going to say? Oh, the best comparison I've ever heard, which works right into what you're speaking, is Cheap Trick meets the Sex Pistols.
Hey, there you go.
I would say that describes us very well. And I think what Jason is referring to is, you know, it might be a cliche, but it is a more mature sound. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mature. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that's not too far from manure.
No, it's not. Or teat.
But being in Minnesota, we're never too far from manure.
So. No. So, but, you know. There you have it.
Get louder. You wanna get to the top of the pops, you little
right. Thanks again. It's always, you know, I always enjoy your conversation. It was really a nice surprise to run into you in Nashville last summer, too.
That was awesome.
So got to hang with you for a little bit there.
I had a really good time at that thing, actually.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.